Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for My Lowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Human sexual organs are shaped as concave and convex. Why are they shaped that way? Therefore, everyone is one world, has opposed to every moon. Therefore, now nobody can oppose me. Talking, liberal, talking, can't that bad.
Have either of you ever heard of the Moonies?
No. Sounds like a band.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you. And I'm glad you're not in a cult. Frankly, I'm glad you haven't been married by a cult leader in Madison Square Garden amongst 2,000 other couples. What? A bit of a spoiler alert. Yeah, this case is wild. So let's get into part two on Sun, Young, Moon, and the Unification Church. Last week, we learned about Moon's early years of growing his cult, his first marriage and children, who he basically ignored and put his church followers first. We learned about his second marriage after it was like pulling teeth for his first wife to get him to divorce her, because Moon's whole cult was built on family values and pure marriage, so having a divorce on his record wasn't a good look. Fortunately for him, though, this was very early in his budding cult, so it's likely that people looked the other way. And there was no internet to gossip about it. But we also learned of his second marriage to a much more agreeable bride, Hak John Han, as she was just 17 to his 40 years old when they married. So he had all the control and the influence in that relationship. We learned that Hak would become the mother of humanity to his father of humanity, and the true parents of the world and the Unification Church. And we learned that their children were the chosen children, 16 in all, including the two he had from the first marriage. And in these next two episodes, we are going to learn that perhaps even more bizarre than Moon is his son Sean, who literally wears a crown of bullets. Yes, you heard me right. That is his getup as the head of his own church after splitting from his family's empire. And I'm just going to leave that there until we get into Sean, because he might just deserve an episode all on his own. Seriously, watching his antics on various documentaries and news outlets is so shocking that I had to call my friend to come over and watch them with me because I couldn't take it in myself. I was like, are we seeing the same thing, or am I hallucinating? This is wild. I mean, he's a trip. And frankly, what he teaches scares the heck out of me. But I digress. Back to his father and likely how Sean became such a spoiled, bullet crown wearing trust fund baby and attention seeking cult leader himself. He learned from the best. His father. And then eventually his mother, once she took the reins as the Messiah. So how did Sun Young Moon go from impoverished religious zealot who was punished in a labor camp in North Korea for his beliefs to a cult tycoon who amassed more than $3 billion in wealth?
It has been 6 weeks since authorities discovered the Heaven's Gate mass suicide. Like Jonestown and Waco before it, the deaths appeared to spell the end for another cult religion. But one group, considered by some a dangerous, destructive cult in the mid-1970s, is as big as ever. It's the Moonies, officially known as the Unification Church. And as Nightbeat's Anthony Moore reports, deceptive sidewalk recruiting tactics criticized 20 years ago appear now to have shifted to Bay Area college campuses. It's a story you'll see only on News Center 4.
Pure ambition. He claimed in his autobiography he only slept an hour or two a night while building his church. Whether that's true or not, I don't think anyone could survive that long on that little of sleep, I think I'd start hallucinating. Prefer a solid 7 to 9 hours, but who knows? That's what he claims. But besides his pure ambition, I think there was a little bit of a mixture of delusional narcissism, the desire for mass adoration, and a flair for the dramatic. The cunning nature to align himself with friends in high places and a family of spoiled children who would also do anything to keep their charmed life and follow in their father's footsteps. It was a perfect storm. And all of this was on the backs of his followers, while he lived in a mansion. For a time, Moon lived in an 18-acre compound in Irvington, New York, which was described as having a ballroom, two dining rooms, one with a pond and waterfall, a kitchen with 6 pizza ovens, a bowling alley upstairs. And then he also owned another estate at the same time in Belvedere, a nearby Tarrytown. But this road to riches and fame and followers would not be without some incredible personal tragedy, scandals, secrets, and financial greed that landed him in prison once again. Early in his marriage to Hawkjaw, he set his sights on world fame, and he went on a 10-month world tour to various countries to speak and recruit. And eventually, he had a presence in over 100 countries, including many parts of Asia, Russia, and South America. He made his first initial big money in Asia. He knew Japan was one of the best places to make a big flush of cash. Moon also knew how to exploit people for their weaknesses and strong suits. Japanese people were proud of being loyal. Honor is important. And Moon found a way to get into the mindset and manipulate that in order to make his millions. But on that same token, he was also obsessed with the American dream. And that American dream brought him to the U.S. in the 1970s. 1970s was the age of cults, and he knew that. He knew that he could reel people in with what they wanted to hear, while simultaneously working his magic behind the scenes. A classic cult scenario we've heard so many times on this podcast. While the exact number of followers may have been inflated by Moon and the church, they were said to have a worldwide following in the millions at their height. Again, those numbers are likely inflated, as his U.S. dream of being the biggest cult there didn't really ever get off the ground and become as big as he had dreamed. According to various sources, the Unification Church claimed up to 3 million members worldwide, but historians of religion dispute that number, estimating a membership of 50,000 at the church's height in the late 70s, with only a few thousand in the United States. Membership has been difficult to evaluate more recently. Church officials give different estimates and often define membership differently according to an individual's level of involvement. Again, that was sourced from the New York Times. And it's just very hard to track because he had a stake in so many schools and businesses and organizations that he was wise not to put the label of the Unification Church on them or even his own name, so as not to deter people from joining or purchasing a product. That way, he could slowly lure them in. So the amount of, you know, followers is really hard to track, but I don't think it's millions like he claimed. I think, I don't know. Should we give him 100,000? His followers were required to recruit other members. They would go and evangelize, but one of the tactics they were told to use on vulnerable young students was to never tell the people they were attempting to recruit that they were part of the Unification Church, and certainly never call themselves the Moonies. That was a term outsiders and the media came up with to label the group as more culty. He said it was okay to lie about their affiliation. It was okay to slowly lure new followers in because it wasn't actually lying. It was just heavenly deception. And you're allowed to commit heavenly deception as long as it's for God's purposes. He would encourage them to name the other powerful entities he owned, like schools, children's camps, political organizations, all entities that were not publicly known to be associated with the Unification Church. In the United States, Moon had interests in commercial fishing, jewelry, fur products, construction, and real estate. He bought many properties in New York, including the New Yorker Hotel in Midtown Manhattan, and the Manhattan Center nearby. He owned a ballet school. The list is so long that I'm just trying to summarize here, but I will read a few from each category from the cultEducation.com website, and my God, this list is long. I'm not even going to spend the time to count the amount of businesses or organizations associated with Moon, but the list looks to be in the thousands. I just kept scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, but I'll name a few from each category. So from the recruiting arm, there was Camp K in Santa Rosa, California, Camp Pizza in Pennsylvania, Camp Sunrise in Berrytown, New York, Collegiate Association for the Research of Principals, International Black Student Alliance, CARP Project, its acronym is, that's Collegiate Association for the Research of Principals, C-A-R-P, okay, International Family Association, International Foundation for the Advancement of Biological Medicine, Inc., International Friendship Banquet, I like that name, International Friendship Banquet. I would like to go to a friendship banquet. Is it held at the Sizzler? Anyways, Jewish Friendship League. I'm now very confused, too. Now he's dipping into other religions. Judaism in Service of the World. And then he also had media fronts. So at one time or another, he controlled newspapers, including Noticias del Mundo and the New York City Tribune, 4 publications in South Korea, a newspaper in Japan, the Middle East Times in Greece, Tiempos del Mundo in Argentina, and I'm not going to attempt to say that. Ultimas Noticias. Ultimas Noticias in Uruguay. God. I got an A+ in Spanish but I went to a really small school. I was really poorly educated. But I also, in college, I got A+. I just don't remember it. Anyways, then probably his biggest media front was he founded the Washington Times. And the extent of his holdings was somewhat of a mystery, but one figure gives a clue. He acknowledged that in the 2 decades since the founding of the Washington Times in 1982, he pumped in more than $1 billion to keep it going. And the Washington Times, most people don't know, yes, was founded by him, and most of the Moonies were working for the Washington Times.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
In my view, we have gone way overboard on the soak the rich rhetoric.
Normally, when I think of the Washington Beltway press corps, I think of, well, not going to say it, wouldn't be prudent. But when I think of the Washington Times, I think of a publication that has brought much needed balance to the way Washington is covered these days.
I know him in a professional capacity as a leader in the establishment of newspapers and magazines throughout the world, founded to serve and with a commitment to truth and objectivity.
Respected guest from Washington, D.C., I established the Washington Times to fulfill God's dispersed desire to save this world.
I think that's how I first came across Sun Young Moon, is I came across an article saying that most people don't know that the founder of the Washington Times is an actual cult leader. And I was like, who's that? And then I remember knowing the term Moonies, but never knowing anything about them. And guys, it's going to get more wild. Okay, so he also had bands. He had the Blue Tuna Band, the Go World Brass Band, Prime Force Band. These are really bad names. Sunburst, Re-Education Band in Berkeley, California, and Voices of Freedom in Washington, D.C. He was building an empire, and Moon sought the praise of the masses. He was Jesus' second coming. He was a god. His followers were instructed that they needed to raise money in order to create a kingdom of heaven on earth. So they did. They sold roses on the street. They worked at the publishing houses. And Moon invested in everything from ginseng tea to grenade launchers, a ballet school, universities, hotels, Manhattan properties, and the fishing industry, and more. Even True World Foods. And if you're a sushi lover, and Google that label, I bet you'll recognize it if you are. He founded and invested in True World Foods, which brought sushi to America. True World is controlled by the Unification Church. In 1980, True World Foods was founded as the Rainbow Fish House on Elston Avenue in Chicago by five Japanese and American members of the Unification Church. But Takashi, one of the five founders, later claimed that Sung Young Moon himself had founded the company. True World Foods was so successful, and still is even today, that it was marketing home sushi kits during the pandemic when restaurants weren't open. And if that wasn't enough, Moon even owned a chinchilla farm at one point. In South Korea, at one time or another, he had a stake in construction, hospitals, schools, ski resorts, newspapers, auto parts, pharmaceuticals, beverages, and a professional soccer team. You get the point. He was rich. Still, his following in the U.S. was lackluster at best. But somehow, he could pack a house. Or basically, his followers could pack a house for him. He just needed to show up. His followers were told to hit the streets and sell out these huge speaking engagements. In the 1970s, he gave a series of public speeches in the United States, including one in Madison Square Garden in New York City in 1974, two in 1976 at Yankee Stadium, and one on the grounds of the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C., where he spoke on God's hope for America to 300,000 people. And then he held another speaking engagement that was called the largest peaceful gathering in history with 1.2 million people in South Korea. And all of this was making him live the high life. But that left some of his followers a little disillusioned, because they would see the insane wealth he was amassing, the insane wealth his kids were living with, and they were peddling flowers on the street. Former member Diane, who was sucked into the cult by way of that 150-mile walk we heard about last episode, she said she sometimes worked 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, for no pay. Another former member says her mom worked every day at the church in the nursery and was likely never paid. But I wonder if Moon lived by that saying, all press is good press, because he was making waves. The recruiting tactics to worried parents of followers consistently made headlines from its inception in the 1950s all the way up until today, with the assassination of the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, who reportedly had ties to the Unification Church. His assassination has been reported to have been motivated by a grudge against the Unification Church and their spiritual sales. The assailant, 41-year-old Tetsuya Yamagami, approached the Prime Minister on July 8, 2022, with a homemade weapon, shot him, and was arrested on the scene. Shinzo Abe was life-flighted to a nearby hospital, but died shortly thereafter. In a direct quote by the Associated Press, as they were able to obtain a letter and tweets believed to be Yamagami's, he said his family and life were destroyed by the church because of his mother's huge donations. Police confirmed that a draft of Yamagami's letter was found in a computer confiscated from his one-room apartment. After my mother joined the church in the 1990s, my entire teenage years were gone, with some 1 million yen, which is $735,000, wasted. He wrote this in a typed letter which he sent to a blogger in Western Japan the day before he allegedly assassinated Abe during a campaign speech on July 8th in Nara, Western Japan. He said, "It's not an exaggeration to say my experience during that time has kept distorting my entire life." Yamagami was four when his father, an executive of a company founded by the suspect's grandfather, killed himself. After his mother joined the Unification Church, she began making big donations that bankrupted the family and shattered Yamagami's hope of going to college. His brother later also committed suicide. After a three-year stint in the Navy, Yamagami was most recently a factory worker. Yamagami's uncle, in media interviews, said Yamagami's mother donated 60 million yen, 440,000, within months of joining the church, When her father died in the late 1990s, she sold company property worth 40 million yen, 293,000, bankrupting the family in 2002. The uncle said he had to stop giving money for food and school to the Yamagami children because the mother gave it to the church, not her children.
Tonight, mounting questions around the shocking assassination of Shinzo Abe, the former prime minister's body arriving at a Tokyo temple for a private wake. Outside, hundreds of mourners paying respect to Japan's longest-serving leader. Tonight, police are investigating their own security failures. There were two shots fired. You can see Abe turn around after the first, but security doesn't subdue the gunman, who's able to fire a second time before he's tackled. Police say the suspected gunman confessed to killing Abe and that he believed the former prime minister was tied to a religious group widely known as the Unification Church, which he says his mother was obsessed over and eventually caused her financial stress.
That was 2022. But let's circle back to Moon's golden years. So meanwhile, Moon is living the high life in terms of finances. This is the 70s, 80s, 90s. And having haters has never stopped Moon before. So when he wanted to be known on the world stage, he did it with the pomp and circumstance, the theatrics of a rock star meets kind of a Roman emperor meets downright Vegas show. He packed a stadium. He had the lights, the music, the crowd, all ready for his grand entrance. And grand, it was. Donning a white costume with a staircase on stage, he would descend from on the stage to handlers on each side of him in costume. There were perfectly timed lights and gestures. He would hold his hands up in the air. The music, everything was heightened to make the people in the audience feel like they were truly experiencing something otherworldly. Their Messiah was here. When you gotta get people crying, falling at your feet, throwing money at the stage, accepting their new arranged marriages, because part of this theatrical Messiah rock show was mass marriages. This was his golden ticket. And when he eventually stepped down from the throne and Hawk took over, the mass marriages became their main recruitment tactic and stronghold of cult status. So these mass marriages were arranged. He would pick and choose which brother and sister of his congregation should be married. Many times, the couples would have only met once or twice, or spent mere minutes together before it came time for their big wedding. In Moon's mind, their time was better spent evangelizing and working for the church. So a marriage would be arranged. It was a chop-chop, back to work, and then they would show up for their less-than-intimate wedding to a perfect stranger. And essentially, Moon would work his magic and build his most successful venture to date. After officiating his first mass marriage of around 30 couples in Seoul in 1961, he grew these mass marriages to packing out Madison Square Garden in 1982, marrying about 4,000 people. And in 1992, quote, "It was without a doubt the loudest I do in history. More than 40,000 brides and grooms packed into the Olympic Stadium in Seoul, South Korea. They all responded in unison as Reverend Sun Young Moon asked them to affirm their marriage vows. It sounded as if the home team had scored a goal." In the largest mass wedding held by Mr. Moon's Unification Church, 20,825 couples were married yesterday. Another 9,800 couples in 10 other countries were linked to the ceremony by a live satellite link. And this is from an article from 1992 in The Independent. And in many of these mass weddings, the brides and grooms paid for this less than intimate experience. For Moon, there was also another benefit to these mass marriages. Mass marriages meant mass reproduction of Moon's followers. And by that, I mean children. If he could control who got married and married them in droves, then they would pump out the perfect little Unification Church babies to grow his cult. But don't worry, Moon wasn't just expecting this of his flock. He himself created his own little family cult with Hawk, and together they had 14 children. And his own kids, just like he and his wife were the true parents, became known as the true children to his followers.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Unification Church, founded by a Korean citizen named Sun Myung Moon.
May God bless you.
Moon claims he is the Messiah. In the 1970s, his followers, dubbed Moonies, were criticized for whisking away unsuspecting young travelers to remote Northern California camps after inviting them to dinner, subjecting them to grueling religious indoctrination, which cult experts call brainwashing.
So here's how this birthing pyramid scheme goes. So his kids are the true children. And then any children born to parents that Moon blessed or arranged their marriages, they were called the blessed children. And they were treated pretty well. Not like, you know, God's children, which is Moon's children because he's essentially God or Jesus. But they were treated pretty well. They were born without original sin. And then the rest of the world's children, anyone not from the Unification Church or blessed in a mass marriage by Moon, well, they were essentially sinful little devils. So naturally, you want to get married by Moon. Otherwise, your kids are cursed. That's kind of how they pitched it to them. And no one wants a devil child. You especially want a blessed by a South Korean guru child. And no one wants a devil child. You want your child specially blessed by a South Korean guru. And you want to be in a marriage where you don't know the person. It's simple facts, guys. So they were only supposed to breed or procreate within the pure Unification Church blood. And if you're a simple teenager or considering simple thoughts like sex with someone outside of the church, he made sure to know how to get you back on track. And that was with Sunrise Camp. No pressure or anything to just be a normal person. If you're even having a thought, he knows about it and you're going to Sunrise Camp. I mean, I went to vacation Bible school, I don't know, a few times as a kid, but this was just like kind of like fun vacation Bible school. Sunrise Camp was on a whole other level. It was like summer camp, except Jesus was watching you the whole time. And by Jesus, I mean Sun Myung Moon. And here's how it's explained in the documentary on Netflix, How to Become a Cult Leader. So the morning started out with sort of like bonding exercises. And by bonding, it was jumping jacks where you had to count to a certain number and hit a quota of sorts. It's all about quotas and sacrifice and making money and following Moon's orders and being very confused. And I'm confused by it. So I can't really explain this that well myself. So I'd like you to hear it from the mouth of one of the children who grew up in the church, Teddy, who appears in the documentary and has went on to become a major advocate for cult deprogramming. Here's a clip.
I believe it was used to coerce us to stay in the church. They were like, if you have sex with someone outside of that pure blood group, you're not pure anymore. And thousands of years of spiritual preparation to bring the Messiah in order to purify our blood is ruined and you're going to hell. So a lot of pressure. Camp Sunrise was kind of like the Bible camp of the Unification Church. It was for second generation kids. We had to do unity jumping jacks. You had to count your jumping jacks, skip a number. If anyone forgot to skip a number, we had to start all over again. We couldn't even eat until we got it right. People would see who was falling asleep and like come wake them up by poking them with a stick.
So after that lovely morning romp, there was then 8 hours of church theology. Not learning to fish or playing Red Rover or singing by a campfire, just 8 hours of lecture. And if you fell asleep out of sheer boredom, you'd be poked with a stick. I would have never survived Camp Sunrise. I was sent to this, I don't know if I've told this on the podcast before. If I have, it was probably like a year ago, and it's a good story, so I'm going to tell it again. I was sent to, and it's not really hard to be like one of the smartest kids in a class of 52. small town, bad education. We've talked about this. But I was sent to this, like it was supposed to be an honor, this like political camp on Willamette University in near Portland, Oregon. And again, supposed to be an honor. Couldn't have hated it more. Number one, I'm not a very political person. Can't stand it. Number two, don't like group activities. And so every morning we would have to wake up and wear white gloves and black skirts and white like button-up t-shirts. Also not great on me. I have big shoulders. You don't want to wear a button-up. I look real, real aggressive in a button-up shirt. Anywho's will be. So we would have to wake up every morning, put on white gloves, and do a flag raising with like this like weird march and like pomp and circumstance, essentially. Hated it. And then we had basically 8 hours of lectures, and I don't even know what our political programming they were teaching. I truly can't remember what it was, because I laid in the back of the class with a magazine inside of my, like a 17 mag or something, or Cosmopolitan, inside my binder that we were was supposed to house all of our, was I in a cult then too? Jesus. All of our political literature. And I would either fall asleep or just read a magazine. It was the worst week of my life. Anyways, this isn't about me. And politics, great segue, Rach, would play a huge role in Moon's plans. Shaking hands and kissing babies and mingling with perhaps some regrettable folks was next on his docket. And when I say regrettable, I'm talking about Bill Cosby. But how was the Messiah to know or really even care? Or did he even have an inkling that his wholesome new buddy was anything but wholesome? Moon knew how to mix and mingle with people in high places that had the same shared hatred of communism. A concept and a petition for family and Christian values would unite him and right-wing powerful political leaders as well.
Reverend Sun Myung Moon is most commonly remembered around the world for mass wedding ceremonies like this one in South Korea in 1982. Couples in these large gatherings often came together from different countries, yet many had never previously met. Ceremonies were an embodiment of the Unification Church Moon founded in 1954. Moon claimed Jesus Christ personally called on him to continue his work of building a unified, multicultural world. As Moon's church and influence grew, he cultivated relationships with conservative politicians and presidents in the United States. Yet in the mid-1980s, he also served 13 months in federal prison after a New York City jury convicted him of filing false tax returns.
Prominent people were paid to appear at Moon-linked conferences. The first president, George Bush, did so after he left office. Others, like former President Gerald Ford, Bill Cosby, not great, Mikhail Gorbachev, and Jack Kemp attended banquets and gatherings, sometimes saying later that they had not known of a connection between Mr. Moon and the organizations that invited them. Moon was still unrelentingly ambitious, and he wanted by the year 2000 to have blessed 1 million couples or arrange mass marriages of them. But life wasn't always on easy street for Moon. Moon was convicted of filing false tax returns in the mid-1980s, and he served 13 months in prison for that. But he had a lot of people that defended him, which is why he aligned himself with political figures. But also during this time, he tragically faced some heartbreaking losses. In 1984, his son Hong Jin died at 17 from injuries sustained in a car crash. Another son, Young Jin Moon, who was 21, committed suicide in 1999 by jumping from a 17th story balcony at Harris Hotel and Casino in Reno, Nevada. Truly heartbreaking. But scandal was also about to knock at his door. From a tell-all book written by the ex-wife of one of his sons, exposing the family and calling Moon a con man, to his own illegitimate child coming out years later, as Moon wasn't the faithful true father and man free from original sin, as he claimed. Next week, on the final episode, I hope, but this is just too fascinating, but I think it's just one more episode, but we're going to go into the next generation, his daughter and her scandals, his gun-loving next Messiah's son, and more. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I appreciate you always. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen. And I'll see you next week Love you. Bye.